Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, May 2nd, 2022. I'm Ash Bennington, joined today by Dave Floyd, founder of Aspen Trading. Dave, it's a great day to have you on the show. Whiplash trading sessions in U.S. equities happening today. We got a 3% print on U.S. 10-year Treasury yields. Looks like everything closed out the day positive, but what a roller coaster getting there. Dave, you trade these markets. What are you seeing? What are you thinking right now?
Wow. It's a loaded question, Ash, but good to be back. Good to see you. Like I said to you before we came on camera, I don't think I've seen an S&P session quite like this either in a long time or ever. And not in terms of the volatility, but maybe the kind of the characteristics under the hood. I mean, the volatility was insane. I mean, literally right out of the gate this morning, we had massive moves up, massive moves back down that took out the lows of the day to make new lows. And then lo and behold, we've rallied all the way back to close positive on the day. I mean, if you're a trader, insane opportunities, albeit you needed to be nimble. Brian and I were talking even before we got on as well. And, you know, he was saying, you know, what's kind of going on here? And again, it's this lack of liquidity in the S&Ps. It doesn't mean you can't get orders done, but the number of bids and offers on in the market is pretty, you know, it's pretty minimal. So it doesn't take a whole lot of selling or buying to kind of move the market up really quickly and then move it back down.
This is the idea of market depth. You've got very thinly traded markets.
There you go. Market depth. That's the better word to use. Exactly. It's kind of, there is no depth to the market depth right now. It's really bizarre, but it's been like that for a long time. It's just getting accentuated right now. In fact, at the Real Vision Macro Conference, I was talking to Mike Green about this because he was the one a couple of years ago that started talking about the way the structure of the market is. This lack of liquidity or this lack of market depth, he thinks it's going to continue. So for traders like myself, I welcome it. Yeah, it has its pitfalls. Every once in a while, you get your hand slapped pretty badly. But to get 60 or 70 point moves in the S&Ps like in under a half an hour, I mean, it's insane. For investors, they got to start coming to grips with the fact that if that market structure and lack of depth continues, you're gonna have to plan for a little bit more durability in your portfolio.
Yeah. By the way, we should say S&P 500 lowest levels of 2022 earlier today, and NASDAQ also. I mean, look, we're up 200 points on the day, 201 spot 38, NASDAQ closing at 12,536. That's up 1.63% on the day on this whiplash day when we saw that early capitulation.
The one thing I'll add that I think actually, you know, from my perspective, based on what I look at, I think the real trigger for us to get the reversal early in the morning, we got the move lower out of the gate, and then right around 6:45 West Coast time, 9:45 back on the East, we had that big rally up, and then we had that big rally up off the lows of the day. Those both came in when the VIX reversed. I had the VIX futures at 32.89, big resistance level that it hit twice today. Each time it hit that level, that's what sent the S&Ps higher. So, you know, a lot of people are getting all excited about the volatility and the VIX is going to go higher and higher. People need to remember the VIX is a mean reverting instrument. It can stay in the 30s, but usually very briefly. If you look at a long-term chart of it, the spikes up into the 30s, low 30s, mid 30s, they don't last long. And, you know, selling volatility into that, which is something else I did today, I sold some call spreads on the VIX to take advantage of that because yes, we might stay volatile.
Unpack that trade for people because it's a really interesting one.
Unpack the dynamics of that in terms of what that means?
Yeah, just the mechanics of how that trade works to sell volatility.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you're using an options contract, but the general premise is this. If you look at the VIX, it tends to be a mean reverting instrument, meaning that spikes up, certainly, and spikes down to a lesser extent tend to be followed by, you know, some retracement of that move. So when you get these big volatility spikes up in the VIX historically, they don't stay there very long. Prices migrate back down, or what one would call mean reversion. When those spikes happen, the volatility, the prices of the options get pumped up really high. So as an option seller, I want to sell those options when the volatility is really high because the price is pumped up. Now, I'm not going to sell these things naked because I think that's a really dangerous strategy, or potentially. So all I simply did was sell a call spread. Calls were bid up in price because of the volatility. I sold the call spread, collected the premium, and hoping to buy it back at a lower price, because most of that premium is going to get sucked out of that options price if and when, and the VIX has already started to come in.
Yeah.
You know, prices have already started to collapse. Now I've got time and price in my favor. I already collected basically the high of the day in terms of the premium. All I need now for the next couple of months is for the market to go sideways or sideways to down, and I'll end up keeping a chunk of that premium. You know, you usually don't get all of it, but you'll capture a fairly decent amount if time and price move in your favor.
Yeah, indeed, to your point, VIX off 4% on the day right now. Looks like I'm close to 32 flat, 32.01 on my screen.
Yep. So far, good trade. Again, something happens overnight. Putin lobs a nuke or something stupid. You know, the VIX can go flying right back up. But normally, absent some exogenous event, the market seemed to carve out a pretty meaningful low today. I mean, who knows? And if it stays that way, the VIX will probably come in over the next few days, next few weeks.
Well, in that case, we probably have much bigger problems than call spreads.
Exactly. That's the least thing I'll be worried about. But that's also the reason you don't want to sell those puts naked, because if something really disastrous did happen,
yeah,
you have unlimited risk. I'm happy to take the upside cap. I'm also happy to take the downside cap as well. And that's the price you pay for trading spreads. You limit everything on both sides, but you go to sleep at night worrying you're not going to get your head ripped off.
Dave, explain what that, first, the mechanics of that, how you do it, and secondly, of what that risk-reward profile looks like, how you get capped on the top, capped on the bottom.
Well, the mechanics of the trade I put on, I'm using the front month VIX futures. And for me, the 32 call made the most sense to sell based on, you know, time decay, based on a variety of things. So that was the first leg. So I'm selling that 32 call and collecting that premium. I'm sorry, 28 call. I apologize. The 28 call. I sold the 28 call. And then,
so you sell the call. Selling the call is selling the right, but not the obligation to buy. So it's a short position.
Short position. I'm expecting that 28 call is going to be worth less by the time I go to buy it back. Now, to hedge myself, I'm buying a 32 call as well. Same month, same instrument, but I'm buying a 32 call. So that's going to cost me some money. But I sold the call for more than I bought the 32 call, and I keep the difference, which is that premium. So that's how I'm hedged.
So it caps you out on the top side, but it also puts a floor under your trade so that you're not naked. You can go and cover if you have to.
Exactly. In fact, I've got the trade up over here.
You're in front of the screen. Let's take a look.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, I'll pull up a chart of the S&Ps right now. Now, the one thing you have to realize, it's a little bit of an asymmetric payoff here. You know, my payoff per contract is $108. And my max risk is basically about $295. So you're risking three times more than you're making. And you know, some people may look at that and say, "Well, why would you want to take that trade?" You know, that is a risk you take. It's asymmetric to the downside. I'm only going to collect a third of what I'm risking. But by and large, when you're selling the premium up at these levels, historically, you're going to capture something on that trade. You're very likely, and again, unless the world blows up tomorrow, the odds of me going losing everything on this trade, not losing everything, but losing the maximum amount, is really quite slim. So now it really becomes a trade management thing. And this is where it gets a little difficult. It's not just about price moving lower. You need time in your favor, which I do because I'm an option seller. So time is in my favor. I've got that time decay, or theta, as they call it.
Theta, yeah.
So as long as those things move in my favor, this trade will be just fine. But I can assure you that I will not hold it till expiration, absent something really amazing to the upside, meaning that the S&Ps are just rallying like there's no tomorrow, there's going to be a sweet spot in there. And it's usually, you know, 2 to 3 weeks out before expiration is when you usually want to close these things out, because there's not much more juice you can take out of them. So that's the one thing that people don't realize about options. It's not just simply set it and forget it. You do have to manage it based on volatility, based on time, and of course, based on price. And that's where it gets a little tricky. The key thing is, of course, not overpaying for an option and not selling an option that's too cheap. So I think I checked most of the boxes on this particular trade today. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, those really are the key variables. When you look at the mathematical models, the so-called Greeks, it can be a little bit complicated, obviously, when you look at those formulas on the page. But you break it down very simply. This is about price. It's about time. It's about volatility.
Yep. Yeah. And that's pretty much the ingredients. The key thing you need, though, first, is you've got to come up with an inflection point in the market. It's not just saying, you know, I think volatility is going to dry up over the next week. Or, you know, let's say the next 2 months. You know, I think doing these weekly options is frankly not really a good use of one's capital. You know, I think you need to be 45 days out or more, kind of hit that sweet spot. But let's say, just say you come up with this random thing that you say, you know what, I think volatility is going to decline over the next month. Well, you might be right, but unless there's a catalyst that then allows you to get that premium at the level you wanted, let's say you're wanting to sell a call spread, you're kind of one step behind the eight ball, so to speak. So for me today, like I said, 32.89 was a big, big level in the VIX futures. And what I can do now, I can actually pull up the VIX. Well, I'll pull up the S&P chart first, if the guys back there want to pull that up or allow me to show the screen.
Yeah, let's do it.
And then we'll work from two charts. We're going to look at the S&P chart first here. And I got to put on my glasses. It helps me see better. So sorry to say that. But this is, you know, the second move down we had this morning. This red line that I've got right here is just simply saying this is where we put in a low. Now, when we look up at the VIX chart, we're going to see that prices actually, when the S&Ps were carving out this low, the VIX was hitting that resistance level at 32.89. That to me is an area where I want to start getting long the S&Ps, and or if I've been looking to sell that call spread, sell that call spread. I didn't sell the call spread on the first go around, but I did on the second go around later in the day. But you know, from an S&P trader's perspective, and I know we're looking at this after the fact, but I can assure you this all unfolded in real time, just as I'm talking about it. Once the VIX hit 32.89 and kind of chopped around a little bit, you had to be a buyer of the S&Ps. You can keep your stops fairly tight, although fairly tight in this market's probably 10 points given the way they're moving. But look at the massive move we got. We went from 41.11 all the way up to like 41.65 in hardly any time. And then, as you said earlier on, we made a new low on the day. But guess where this new low was put in? Right when the VIX was again hitting 32.89. And I have not seen a move that quick, that, you know, ferocious in quite some time. So again, you're combining two markets. Now, the really awesome trades that happen on occasion is that you get the VIX at a level and you get the S&Ps at a level. I didn't have that today, but I had the VIX at a level that allowed me to go in and navigate longs in the S&Ps. There are times, though, when the VIX is at a level, and this here is actually a level. This here is just a frame of reference so that folks at home can see it on their screens. What was interesting, though, and I want to go back to that depth of market conversation we were having earlier, we had a tremendous amount of buying on this move up here. Tremendous. I mean, the bids just kept being refilled. There was nothing on the offers. It was a perfect stair step higher. What was really interesting, though, is that even when this market started to move lower, you know, for the first 10, 15 minutes, there was aggressive buyers in there, but they were being overwhelmed by this selling, what you call, you know, people placing orders on the bids, which is what I would call, you know, aggressive buyers. They're loading orders onto the books versus just passive selling at the market. And eventually they get overwhelmed, and that's what took
David,
us down.
You could explain that, the distinction between passive selling and entering these limit orders, passive selling at market and bidding because I think it's something that people probably who are not involved in this at the level you are struggle to understand a little bit.
Well, you just hit upon it. The key word is at the market versus I'm putting in a limit order. I'm on the bid at that price. And so people that are on the bid at a particular price, they keep adjusting that, you know, because they're very bullish. Let's say in this case, they were very bullish on the way up here. They kept, you know, raising their bids, you'd see it at every level. Each time we traded higher, the bids would follow back up. Well, when we started trading back lower, those same bids were still there, but they kept buying in at lower prices. Oftentimes what happens when you reverse is those bids just fall away. They didn't fall away today. So that's what I would call the quote unquote aggressive buyers. They were being overwhelmed by the passive sellers, which is basically market orders. Just boom, 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 just sell.
Get and fill
sell.
That market wherever
just they are. Just getting filled. So for a while, they absorbed it. You know, they took a little bit of heat. And then eventually, they just walked away. And then what I'm saying, why this was interesting to me and anybody watching it at that granular of a level, was that this whole move lower initially was being absorbed by buyers. And eventually, they just walked away. They were just like, shoot, you know, we thought we had it here. Again, I'm speculating what people are thinking. Thought we had it here. We rallied off the lows of the days. Let's keep buying. It's probably just a dip. And eventually they threw in the towel. But then they came back and did the same damn thing on the close. Those aggressive buyers just kept on the bid the whole way up. So again, that's more of market dynamics. And I know maybe a lot of viewers, especially, you know, swing traders, I should take that back. Swing traders would do themselves a little bit of justice in watching that type of action because it does give you clues as to what's happening. Yeah. You know, from an investor standpoint, this is a blip on the radar. Your eyes are glazing over. But anybody out there short-term trading, be it stocks or S&Ps, because stocks take their cues from the S&Ps, this is the kind of stuff that can give you edges. You know, that's what gives you the edge on knowing when to sell the call spread or knowing when to buy the S&Ps or knowing when to stand aside. So,
right.
You go from very objective technicals to, you know, observation mode, which is why I still think a human being has an edge in this market. A computer can't do all that. It's, you know, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting. You mentioned this idea that longer term investors aren't necessarily thinking these terms. But if a long term investor is watching this show, they're looking at that and they're going, boy, I'm looking at those green candles at around whatever time that is. I can't really see it. It's like about two. Yeah, I was on the other side
This is right in the last hour and a half. Yep.
Yeah. So around, you know, whatever it is, 12:30 or so. It's around
2:30 New York time. Yep.
2:30 New York time. You see that those green candles just stacked back to back to back as the bid keeps getting hit and keeps getting entered at higher levels as that price rises.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it this way. I also kind of throw it out there as a thought for some people. You know, if you've got somebody who's longer term investing, you know, they're watching their portfolio. They're not doing a whole lot. You know, watching this kind of stuff can sometimes give you the opportunity to sneak in a trade there. And again, I'm not trying to downplay like, oh, you sneak in a trade like it's nothing, but that's a massive opportunity right there. You know, from 40, 60 to 40, that's 100 points in the S&Ps. Even if you traded one micro contract, which is $5 a point, that's $500. You know, I mean, I mean, this volatility is insane. There are opportunities there. And if you're trading S&P minis, which is $50 a point, you can do the math. $5,000. Again, you're not going to capture the whole thing. Nobody does. Anybody who tells you that's, you know, whatever, they're on a different planet. But if you can isolate the areas where there's inflection points, you can either maybe help, you know, maximize the entry point on a stock you've been looking to buy, or maybe you're a swing trader in the S&Ps and you're like, you know, I want to get long. It feels as though we're making a low here. And then you see this type of price action with the VIX hitting a resistance level. Ding, ding, ding. There's your signal. Even though you're not going to trade it, you know, short-term trade it, you gave yourself an opportunity to pick up the S&Ps cheaply today because you actually think they might go back to, let's say, 43 or 4,400 because you've got a different time frame.
And Dave, that's very well framed, very well explained. I'm not a day trader myself, but it's just fascinating to just walk through this for what it says about market mechanics and what it says about the ultimate levels of demand in this market.
Yeah, or lack of at times when you have the lack of market depth. You know, I think one of the things that Mike Green talks about, and he's talked about it in a couple of different interviews here, is this whole market structure. Brian and I talked about it before we came on camera. I think we got an idea here where we might be able to pair Mike and I on the same screen and do an interview regarding this because he understands this. And for me, what he's talking about actually creates sustained opportunities because if this lack of liquidity in the market prevails, which he thinks it will, that's going to keep the market volatile for a very long time. And I don't think we should all be scared by volatility. It can be your best friend. I mean, it's a trader's best friend,
right?
But I think it can be an investor's best friend too if you know what it means and not get spooked by it.
Yeah, very well said, Dave. What else are you looking at here today?
That was all I could look at today, Ash. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, I'd love to keep an eye on 10-year notes. I keep thinking that they're going to be a buy, but good God, I don't know. I can't even venture a guess there. It's just been a complete disaster, you know, for anybody holding treasury notes, treasury bonds, or anything fixed income. I think the takeaway for me, independent of all the granule stuff that we went into today, is that maybe we might have carved out a little bit of a short-term low today. That was pretty damn impressive. So that would be the takeaway for me, is that maybe I'm kind of leaning bullish coming into tomorrow. I know we've got the Fed on Wednesday that could throw another monkey wrench into it, but I'm just going day to day. I try to show up each day with a narrative as to where I want to be in the market. Am I bullish? Am I bearish? And if so, above and below which levels? So, but maybe your question goes back to something we've talked about a lot in the past, is that, you know, what else are you looking at? It's like, whew, there's not much else you need to look at, you know, right there. Plenty of opportunities alone in the S&Ps. And I bet you if you were interviewing somebody who's trading stocks, they could say, hey, I had more than I knew what to do with trading Apple today, because I'm sure Apple was all over the place. I'm sure Amazon's, you know, all those high flyers. And if you ask them the same question, they'd be like, whew, I don't know. I was trading Apple all day long. I couldn't take a look at anything else.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Apple chart pretty choppy as well.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Dave, we got some great questions coming in, and I want to ask
fantastic. Great.
A couple of these. Here's one from Bonito from the Real Vision site. The substance of the question is, Dave, can you find any other way to explain today's price action kind of other than the late tape cycle? So in other words, are there any other ways that you think about this that we haven't touched on, or is this kind of the main window through which you view?
Well, I don't think there always has to be a story or a reason. Sometimes it just is, you know, a lot of buyers stepped in, a lot of sellers stepped in. And I know that sounds overly simplistic and it might even sound patronizing. It's not meant to sound that way. we always want to latch onto something to give us a reason for that. And I get that we're human beings, but I don't usually look at it that way. I just look at it from the standpoint of selling pressure seems to be leading, buying pressure is leading right now. And I just go with that. I'm not looking for the reason, because while I'm looking for the reason, I'm missing out on why I should be long or why I should be short.
Right.
And frankly, it doesn't really matter. I mean, all I'm interested in is, am I in at a good point and can I sell it at a higher price? That's the only reason I'm looking for.
Better to be able to make money than to know the reason.
I've talked to a lot of people over the years who have reasons out the wazoo, but yeah, they don't know how to trade. So
here's a great question from Jay from YouTube. We're talking about this earlier, market depth, liquidity. And the question is, how does one find out how much buying or liquidity is in the market? Are there indicators or references that you look at, Dave?
I'm just looking at time and sales. You know, I'm doing it the old fashioned way. I came into the industry that way, looking at time and sales, and I have an ability to read that, and anybody can get that ability. You just got to look at it every day. And that's where you're going to see the volume. You're going to see where the prices are taking place at, the volume, the size of the bid and the offer. That's to me where the kind of the secret, not the secret, that's where the edge is garnered by watching the flow. You know your levels. Those are as objective as they come. There's no subjectivity to them. They're just the price levels that you're looking at. Then when those get to those levels, you're looking to see how the market's reacting and how it's trading relative to that. And that's really where the edge gets carved out. But it's basically a time and sales window. It's watching the tape.
Right.
And that's why, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of concentration. It's also the reason that I think this is an important thing. If you're shorter term trading, be it stocks or futures, you're only trading the first hour and a half and the last hour and a half, maybe even just the first hour, last hour. If you're trying to intraday trade, you know, middle of the day, by and large, there are of course anomalies and outliers. It's a waste of time. The flows are gone. The flows are juiciest on the open and on the close. And that's where you're going to be able to read what's happening in the market.
Yeah, really interesting and an important insight for people who are thinking about markets in this way, perhaps for the first time. Dave, great conversation. Final thoughts, key takeaways that you'd like to sketch out as we get to the end of this conversation.
Not really. I mean, and again, not to say that I don't have anything to say, but it, for me, where we are right now, given the way the market's trading, I'm really just kind of taking it day to day. I'm not trying to say, you know, I think S&Ps are going to be the here in a week. You asked me that question a month ago, I might've had a different answer because the volatility wasn't quite as high and I was maybe framing my trade slightly longer term. But for me right now, after what happened today, I'd be coming in bullish. I don't have any levels off the top of my head because I don't have that particular chart in front of me right here. But I'd be looking to probably lean bullish tomorrow. And, you know, as long as we don't pull back too far, you know, we have the possibility, emphasize possibility of maybe moving a little bit higher in the market.
Yeah. Before we close out, I wanted to take a look at a clip. This is on Real Vision's platform today for Essential Plus and Pro subscribers. This is Raoul's macro masterclass on recession, inflation, and the markets, to take it from the tactical to the strategic, from the trading to what's happening more broadly from a macro perspective. Let's take a look at that clip.
It is an unbelievable time. The world has never lived through a period of time of Metcalfe's law adoption curves on top of Metcalfe's law adoption curves, creating Reed's law, which is a ridiculously powerful moment in time. We've got this aging population. It's creating tremendous fear because the rate of technological advance is so dramatic. We've never lived anything through it in such a short period of time. But you want to own that bloody stuff. You don't want to fear it. And I see people on Twitter all day. It's like, oh, Cathy Wood, these people are awful. Who wants to own a Tesla? You're fighting the biggest logarithmic trend we are ever going to see. That is the opportunity of a lifetime. So I want to be a buyer when I see that the inflation story goes away. I'm looking to buy growth. In fact, I put out a trade recommendation in Global Macro Investor and in Macro Insiders about this by using a whole basket of these exponential names. I've been following for 18 months. I haven't pulled the trigger on any of them before, including things like ARK. where I've said, like, let's average in over 8 weeks, because I think the market might have this 2018 spike low, but I'm not sure. I don't have the visibility. And if we get a recession, what are the Fed going to do? Well, the Fed are going to print. And what does that do to these stocks? Well, real rates fall. Those stocks explode higher. And they're already very oversold.
So there you have it, Raul, talking about the broader macro picture. It's interesting, Dave, to have that conversation in the context of our conversation today that's very tactical and very trading oriented. When you hear people who are thinking about things from a macro perspective, what view do you think the trading perspective can come to inform on that? Is it something, for example, of just timing of entry and exit points? How can you think about some other potential uses for that framework of thinking?
It's a really good question. And, you know, I think Raul's onto something. At some point, there's going to be some good bargains to be had. There's always going to be the flip side argument of, you know, earnings are still lofty, you know, all the stuff that I don't usually focus on. But, you know, the market tends to go up over time. Let's be honest. And we have a very proactive Fed. And Raul alluded to that. You know, if the economy starts to soften, that's going to really put the brakes on, you know, any rate hike. So at some point, certain stocks are going to be attractive, no doubt about it. To answer your question, though, this is one of the things that I was really pleased about in terms of attending the macro experience down in Del Mar a couple of weeks. Because when they asked me to come, I was like, the macro experience, you want the short-term technical guy to talk to you? Did you get the right guy here? But it made sense. And the case I made down there and the case I'll make here is that technicals are the ultimate complement to someone's macro view or fundamental view. And right. I can point to many, many cases that, you know, you've got certain levels on charts, whether it be a daily chart or a weekly chart, the level's the level. You could put that level on a 1 minute chart and do something with it. You could put on a daily chart and do something with it. So I think if you know some really objective technical levels, which is what I look for in everything that I do, and you marry that with a good macro view, when those two come together, I actually think that that's a robust trading opportunity. I think where macro can be a little challenging, I mean, not that all investing and trading isn't challenging, but I think where macro can be a little bit more challenging is that you're trying to get the timing. That's your view based on what you've looked at, and that's wonderful. It may be very well thought out, kind of the same way that people do technical analysis. It may be beautiful. It may be technically perfect according to all the rules. But unless the rest of the market cares about it at the same time, that view doesn't really go anywhere. So that's why I think marrying a good, solid technical backdrop with a macro backdrop is, you know, probably the better way to approach it. So, you know, for those out there that are looking for those cheap bargains, let's say on an ARC or whatever it may be, do some homework, find a technical level. And again, there's a lot more to it than just finding a level. There's an approach to it so that your technical level is a level that is recognized by the market at large, meaning because a lot of volume has taken place over there at that level over time in terms of frequency. That's how I define levels. I don't define levels as some subjective trend line that I draw in, because again, that's subjective. That's how I'm viewing the market. I'm not smart enough to know, you know, when that will work. But what I am smart enough to know is that I want to be active in the market when the rest of the market, you know, theoretically, is also looking at that same level, because that's where I know I'm going to get an inflection point. That's where there's going to be an opportunity. That's how you correctly trade levels. Identify the levels that other people are going to be interested in. So that's how I'd answer that.
Dave, that ties it all together perfectly. And it's one of the reasons why I think Real Vision is so much fun, is that we get to have these conversations across time horizons from different perspectives. And by the way, I would love to see you and Mike Green looking at markets, walking through the charts together. I think that would be an absolute blast.
I think it would be. Mike's got so much to talk about that I think can really help an individual trader conceptualize and understand market structure, which does have an impact. And as I was telling Brian, you know, I was having coffee with Mike down in San Diego. And by the end of the conversation, I was like, wow, this guy's really smart. I maybe got 50% of what he's talking about, which is why I would love to talk to him on air, kind of going back and forth about this, because I want to get more clarity on what he's talking about in this, in terms of this market depth issue, because I think he's got it pegged.
Yeah. Dave, thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure, Ash. Really appreciate it. Have a great day. And thanks to everybody behind the scenes there, too.
Thanks again for watching Real Vision's The Daily Briefing. Warren Pies will be back tomorrow with Tom Thornton. Obviously, as we close out this day, it's been a wild day in markets. Everything ended in the green, but we know that U.S. GDP is currently negative. We're thinking about all of that right here at Real Vision, and we're excited to host this Global Recession Is Everyone Wrong series. For Real Vision subscribers, it's absolutely free. If you're not a subscriber, go check out realvision.com/Global Recession. That's realvision.com/Global Recession to learn more. And by the way, in 30 minutes at 5 p.m. Eastern time, I'm going to be joined by Real Vision founder and CEO Raul Pal as we continue a conversation about all of these topics and more on Twitter Spaces. Hope to see you there. Have a nice night, everyone.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.